Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology here on WebmasterRadio.fm. It is the 8th of October, 2015. Time's flying. Get your Christmas, start your Christmas marketing if you haven't started it already, because it's, you know, it's almost Canadian Thanksgiving. That comes up next week, coinciding with Columbus Day in America. And Dave, we're into the fourth quarter. The year is almost over. Time flies so fast, it blows my mind.
I know. You know what? I even remember in my head, and it turns out you were right. I remember in like late June, you're like, summer's almost over. And I was like kind of rolling my eyes, our visitors might remember. And then here we are, and it feels like that was yesterday. You were right, Jim.
Douglas Copeland, the science fiction author, has a term called acceleration culture. You know, just like, you know, technology and the tasks that we have to do every day and just the amount of interesting stuff that's happening. And maybe this happens as you get older, too. I don't know. But just, you know, time speeds up. There's just so much to interest you in a day that, you know, 8 hours, 10, 15, 16 hours passes in the blink of a minute. So, yeah, folks, the last vestiges of warmth are here. Winter will soon be upon us. More importantly, Christmas will soon be upon us. And there's a lot of flux happening with Google, with search engines and technology in general. This is going to be a fun show today because we have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, ranging from content that is coming out of PubCon. And I'm pretty sure that PubCon is – I think PubCon won. I don't know. I don't know how to say this, but, you know, when you think of the pantheon of really important conferences – for staying power alone, but just for what it's grown into, I just got this, you know, this sense that PubCon won.
Yeah, no, they really do seem to have, eh? I mean, it's a funny one because you almost have to view SMX as an extension of the search engine strategies, right? Because Danny sort of moved from one and immediately started the other, right? Danny Sullivan, for people who don't know the name I'm referring to. So it's funny because I look at, PubCon has lasted forever. But then as conferences go, you know, I sort of think of Danny Sullivan, right? And then I'm like, okay, but you've been organizing conferences forever too. So it's like, oh, it's almost a tie. I'll give him almost a tie. But yeah, PubCon for pure staying power, popularity, no doubt about it. Brent's done a really, really good job.
I wonder if it's so popular because it's the place Danny's not watching. You know, like SES lost it. They threw it away.
Yeah.
SMX, as you said, is run by Danny, who's like the grandfather. You know, he's, how to say this? Danny Sullivan is, we all owe everything to Danny popularizing search and creating the standards of the community that we, you know, that still serve today. And, you know, being really the original voice of search, Danny was synonymous with search and has such degree of reverential respect in the industry that, you know, maybe attending his shows is like attending grandpa's not grandpa in a bad way, but, you know, the overseer, the authority, even though Danny's one of the nicest, friendliest, funniest people.
Oh, definitely.
So, you know, go to PubCon, which, you know, happens to be in Vegas, formerly known as Sin City, now sort of Sin Light City. I hearkened for the good old days, you know, when guys like me could get away with being guys like me.
So tell us, Jim, what is going on at PubCon? I mean, I know you've been keeping up on what's going on. I've been watching my Twitter feed, but you brought it up. So take us in.
Well, you know, the number one PubCon thing is for people who aren't there, who aren't actually in the sessions. The number one general PubCon thing is, of course, the U.S. Search Awards. Remember last year, Dwayne Forrester won the Personality of the Year?
Yeah, well-deserved.
Or U.S. Search Professional of the Year, and he was, you know, awarded with the tiara and everything. Mm-hmm. This year, that goes to Larry Kim from WordStream. Also really well-deserved.
Definitely.
Check this one out. I think this is a totally well-deserved award. Bill Hunt won Lifetime Achievement Award.
Oh, okay. See, I did not know that.
Now, you know, if anyone deserves a Lifetime Achievement Award, well, I guess lots of us do, but Bill certainly does. Goodness gracious. He's exited, you know, two different firms. He, you know, built and created two different international search marketing firms, exited both on a positive note, selling them both quite well, I believe, and is, you know, now one of those freelance consultants. One of them freelance consultant people, eh? And Bill is just one of the most trusted authorities anywhere in the world in search. So Lifetime Achievement Award for Bill Hunt, that's way cool. Best Small Agency, Rankhammer. To be honest, I've never heard of Rankhammer before, but...
That's because they're a small agency.
A small agency. How about this one, though? Best Large Agency, Elite SEM.
Oh, okay.
Do you know them?
I don't know them, but I should. One that I found interesting looking through, and it's something they both show up on my resolution, which is just the 16x1050, right? So not a huge resolution. The same company shows up winning two categories as I was scrolling down, and that has to catch my mind. A company you know, I know, you know the owner, you love them, so do I. Best low budget campaign in display PPC, best use of social media in a search campaign. AimClear wins both categories.
Now, just to note, best low budget campaign was AimClear working with Seagull Outfitters.
They were, yeah.
Display PPC campaign. Now, best use of social media in a search campaign was not a low budget campaign. This was with Airbnb.
Yeah, that won't be low budget.
Yeah. SEO, social SEO, psychographic amplification. Get Marty to say that three times fast.
Yeah, I know.
Another one, you know, Bill Hunt actually won two awards. He got Lifetime Achievement Award, but he also won for Best Consultant.
A couple that I found really interesting. Innovation, a tool, I'm sure you use it, I use it. Majestic wins that one. So an interesting tool for folks looking at their tools. I do use it. That along with Ahrefs, I sort of use them depending on which one I happen to have you logged into. It'll be the one I use. But best SEO software, your friend of mine, Danny Goodwin,
works over at
LinkedEx. He does Momentology, their blog for them, and edits that. But LinkedEx wins SEO platform of choice for agencies and in-house teams. I've used it. I'm sure you have too. It is it's a great piece of software. So something for folks to check out as well.
And, you know, I guess we should the funny thing about having an award for the best SEO campaign is very few people will have actually seen it. I mean, don't get me wrong. Millions of people will have seen it, but they won't know they've seen it. They just know they will have clicked on a winning result, right?
Right.
Best SEO campaign, Geary LSF. They won for Monkey Sports Hits a Home Run. I think it's very cool. But I got to ask you, Dave, I don't know how you run your company, but do you give your campaigns names like that?
I don't. No, I usually refer to them by their domain name.
Yes. So anyway, most creative naming of campaign goes to Geary LSF, Monkey Sports Hits a Home Run. Actually, no, that was the best SEO campaign. And congratulations to everybody. There's a number of other winners in the U.S. Search Awards for 2015. I think this is a really cool annual event. We have our own awards show, for goodness sake. Wow, huh?
Yeah.
I noticed lack of best podcast in industry.
Oh, well, we know who would win that.
Ross and John, probably. Serious Oversight, but I want to go head-to-head with them on it anyway. Serious Oversight, I think.
You know what? I'll note, and here we are publicly, so I'll note it here. Met up with Ross for lunch yesterday. He says hello.
Oh, you're kidding, really?
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, that's very cool.
And Mark. Sorry, folks, for those who don't know, these are folks that we've worked with at Stepforth Marketing.
Ross,
the owner, great guy.
You, Ross Dunn, and Mark Johnson got together for lunch?
For lunch, yeah.
What are you guys up to?
Yeah, I can't tell you on the radio.
I want in. I want in. I was part of that. I made all that to happen. I want in.
Well, I'll tell you on break.
Okay, excellent. What else do we got that happened? Hey, while we're on the subject of PubCon, I wanted to hold this on to later in the show just because it's kind of sad, but it's also kind of important. This year's PubCon has a sort of a meta theme that you know goes beyond search engines and working with search, and it's about us as a family, as an industry. You know, as we mentioned last week, and as everybody, I'm sure most listeners of our show are aware, one of the most beloved people in the search community died way too young. Dana Lukadu died a couple of weeks ago from injuries relating to a bike accident that she suffered over a year and a half ago. And, you know, I guess at last year's PubCon, everyone was thinking about Dana in the spirit of recovery, and this year's PubCon, everyone is thinking of Dana's spirit. And to try to create a positive legacy around Dana's name, Ed Lewis, Dana's husband, and Alan Blywythe, along with a few others in the industry, but let's call it for what it is, primarily Alan Blywythe and Ed Lewis, have set up something called Dana's Fund. You can go to danasfund.org, and it was Dana's wish that a fund be created in order to help ensure truly deserving young men and women who have a passion for marketing, founded in a sense of making a positive impact on the world, that these folks be given an opportunity to begin or further their education in the field of multimedia and or of digital marketing. danasfund.org. And if you're over at Facebook today or, you know, looking at stuff around PubCon or reading Alan Blywythe's feed, you'll note that he's noted Majestic donated $1,000 to Dana's Fund. Outspoken Media donated $1,000 to Dana's Fund. And, you know, folks in the industry are calling on folks in the industry to donate something to the Dana Lukadu Memorial Fund. So, you know, danasfund.org, easy to donate. Do it via PayPal. Do it via credit card. Just do it. So that's the other, you know, and there's a whole bunch of other news coming out of PubCon, which I think we're going to have to talk about in subsequent sections, because we're about a minute away from going to break. A couple of things I do want to note that we will be talking about. Panda rolling out in phased increments. That was being reported in the SEM post this morning. I think that's quite interesting.
Yep.
Authorship not dead. That's neat. Duplicate content, schema.org, Google going after attacked spam sites, artificial intelligence, and accelerated results on mobile pages. All of this and more are going to be coming up here on Webcology. But before we get to that, we got to pay some bills. We got to take a break. On behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You're listening to Webcology on webmasterradio.fm on the 8th of October, 2015. Stick around. We got a lot coming up after these messages.
Sit tight and don't move. Webcology. We'll be back after this short break.
Internet Marketing Inc. designs fully integrated digital programs that improve brand experiences and grow businesses through valuable data insights and strategy across all types of media. Paid, owned, and earned. Their digital experts nimbly adapt strategy by providing you a comprehensive view of your brand's online audience and program performance. If you are looking for a data-driven approach to online marketing and advertising, call Internet Marketing Inc. today at 866-563-0620 or visit internetmarketinginc.com.
Reinventing keyword research, simplifying campaign optimization, redefining competitive analysis. SpyFu brings you an entirely new way to find the most profitable keywords for your SEO and PPC campaigns. New tools, new data, and a brand new look. We've streamlined SpyFu so that you can optimize your search engine marketing more efficiently, more accurately, and more intuitively. Visit SpyFu.com. That's SpyFu.com. And start downloading your competitors' keywords now. Try it free.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan. talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart, or you've read their SEO code of ethics, so you know they're SEO experts. But did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
Looking for a better way to get more traffic and interaction to your Facebook page? Imagine Facebook interactivity on your page like you've never seen. Introducing your new Facebook marketing fix, Zo Social, the new and revolutionary way to easily manage and automate your Facebook contests and sweepstakes. Create a fun, easy-to-win contest by writing a simple Facebook post. Watch your post go more viral and generate loads of interaction. Track your traffic and generate email lists with ease. Zo Social is mobile-friendly and complies with Facebook terms of service. Let Zo Social give your Facebook page some flash today. Zoom over to zosocial.com.
Commercials off. Now back to Webcology, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Webcology on WebmasterRadio.fm. It's the 8th of October, 2015. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. And, there's a ton of stuff to talk about in the industry today, especially if you're three people who've worked for a company together and went and had a secret meeting in Victoria and didn't invite Jim. But I think the one that's of most interest in search to webmasters, one that I really want to dig into, is comments that have been made by Glenn Gabe, John Gary Ellis, and John Mueller about how the Panda 4.2 algorithm is being rolled out, why it's coming so slowly, and what they mean by it's coming out in pushed increments. What do you think about this, Dave?
Yeah, I have a feeling that what they're saying is that they've got a sort of stack of rule, and this is guessed just for our audience here in what they might be meaning by this. I'm guessing that they've got a set of sort of predefined stages for this to roll out at. They're confident in the first one. They're not as confident in the next stages. So push, tweak, right? Like just sort of push this thing out over and over, but allowing for adjustments in the next stage before you actually push that next stage out. So it's a quasi-manual rollout, but with an organized sort of hierarchy to that rollout. That's how I'm anticipating or interpreting what they mean by that. But you know, they could just mean, hey, we're going to just keep tweaking it and pushing it out consistently, but obviously with a higher regularity than they are right now.
But then, so what you're suggesting is we have like Panda 4.2.1, Panda 4.2.2, Panda 4.2.3, etc.
Exactly. Allowing for those fixes. And you can't blame them. These are massive update, right? Like, you know, we all know this. But when if we actually think about what's involved, like the massive mathematics and number of human beings involved in every one of these things, yeah, the idea that they need to, you know, push out their known and then adjust for the next stage and run some testings on it based on what happened in the first one, and then okay, launch that one. Okay, now let's test these things, because they're constantly having to push the boundaries. And they're going to have to head into some unknowns here. So the idea that they may sort of stagger out and start with the most likely to succeed and move down, so that they're basing the ones with a higher variable factors that they're wanting to test, push those a little further down after they can sort of stack things on top of each other, avoid something like the Florida update, right, or something like that where it actually caused some a lot of collateral damage, or like some previous Penguin updates have caused massive collateral damage. If they're working to avoid that, you're not going to hear a complaint out of me by pushing those things with a high variability or higher chance of failure or false positives. Push those to the end after you can sort of stack other components of the algorithm on it. See how those go so you don't end up with conflicting portions of the algorithm.
Well, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And you got to, for listeners who don't remember, back in 2004 or 5, Google released, or maybe even earlier, maybe 2003. Anyway, Google releases an algorithm called Florida. They released it just around American Thanksgiving in November.
Worst possible timing.
The worst possible time, just before Christmas, and this was back in the day when it took weeks to almost a month to see significant changes in Google's search result pages. When they rolled that out, it caused chaos, and a lot of small businesses lost their year because they lost their placements just before Christmas. Florida was a significant update, not a small minor one. It changed everything. Panda, as well, changed everything. And, you know, astute readers astute listeners might note that we're on the Panda version 4.2. So there's been three previous mega iterations of Panda with, you know, minor tweaks in between. And as Dave said, the first one they rolled out turned everything upside down, freaked out the web. And given the, as you said, again, to agree with you, Dave, just the huge volume of websites, mind-blowing. You can't even conceive of the number of web documents that have been published that are out there and in Google's index. It's impossible to.
Yeah.
I mean, they could give us a hard number, and I'm sure they have some version of a, you know, rolling hard number. But still, that number is so big, it's impossible to truly conceive of it. The math is incredible. So I agree with you. Rolling it out slowly and incrementally allows them to do tests and allows them to make the tweak here and there to prevent Ma and Pa from getting slammed or hammered.
Right.
So knowing that this is rolling out slowly, and the honest truth is we don't know what that means. We don't know. It's not sectorally. You know, it's not like they're hitting the travel sector and testing in there and then, you know, hitting the sports and leisure and checking what it does to sports and leisure type sites. Given that it's rolling out slowly and webmasters are having to adapt to changing circumstances, it's and when I say changing circumstances, we don't know exactly what the changes are. We just know the effect of the changes.
Yep.
Google's actually giving some very good advice about what to do about this. For instance, if you're trying to fix a Panda problem, Google is suggesting it's much better to improve quality content than it is to remove pages or mess around with URL structure or the little teeny things inside the website. It's about quality content.
Yep.
What do you think of that advisory, though? I mean, there's so much technical. There are so many technical fixes you can find on virtually any website that comes your way.
Yep.
Do you think that the content is more important than the structure of the site?
I mean, what a dangerous question that is.
I know.
Because there is no right answer. To me, it's a lot like, if I go into a, because you're competing on Google, so you're competing in the finest search engine that exists. So if you go into the finest restaurant and they serve you a fine meal on plastic Ernie and Bert plates, the experience is not going to register as good. And this may not be the best example or illustration, but if your technical isn't in place, the fact is your content, I mean, you know this, I think we've discussed this in the past, your content can't possibly be read as clearly and cleanly.
Mm-hmm.
And a further fact, and this is where I love jumping into technical, and I tend to do it early in campaigns. And the reason is, and you know this, we've both been in this long enough, and probably most of our listeners too, there's this checklist, right? You're sitting at number four. How do you move to number three, right? Like, if you haven't solved your technical, there's always this unknown, and I hate unknowns. Like, I hate this, like, should I tweak the content? Should I add more content? Do I need links? Is it the technical? If we can eliminate technical, it's just one less thing to have to worry about, right? If you know that your page speeds are good, you know your mobile is solid, you know your schema's in there, you know that your layout is solid and Google can get through and your internal linking structure passes the weight the way it's supposed to, good. Now you know you don't have to deal with that to push yourself above the fold. You got one more thing to worry about.
Well, I kind of liken it to... I've often used the analogy that we're really just glorified auto mechanics. and I think the analogy still works. We soup up websites and make them into basically race car websites. And if the structure of the car isn't solid, a wheel can fall off. And if a wheel falls off, that means massive loss of rankings. One of the reasons we deal with the technical issues first in our practice as well is because you need to make sure that that's not the problem. Also, you need to make sure that all the work you invest in creating far stronger content, and don't get me wrong, content is the key, but all the work invested in creating far stronger content can be completely derailed again if for some reason the tire falls off while you're rounding a curve.
Well, and to use an example from another story we wanted to cover today, so I'll just quickly move us to that or use it as an example. Mm-hmm. If your technical isn't in shape, news came out. This is from just a couple days ago. New algorithm changes. Aggressively target hacked spam. So if your technical isn't in shape and kept up to date, now you've got, and this is, they're looking at this impacting 5% of queries. So there's that much hacked spam out there. Oh. And this may be as severe as you've got a hacked site to as simple as you've got these, you know, we've all seen them. Well, anybody who's done like link ads, you know, the average, my dad may not have, but you certainly have. Mm-hmm. The like, you know, notice at the bottom of a page this has been hacked, or the injection of a whack of crappy links, usually for negative SEO, but sometimes not, into hacked pages. You know, if your tech isn't in shape, this is the kind of stuff that can happen.
Well, absolutely. What you're talking about, David, and this is actually a big problem on the web. A lot of webmasters don't even know they've been hacked like this. They don't know that their page is serving up links to bestiality sites, sometimes to kiddie porn sites, sometimes to organizations that you wouldn't want to mention on polite radio unless Homeland Security came to visit you later for mentioning them. That's it. You know what? As good a segue as any, and it does bolster the why you keep up with technical SEO. I'll try to break this down really simple. This is an important story. Google is going to be cracking down on, as Dave said, on what are called aggressively hacked sites. Here at Webmaster Radio and here on Webcology, we're constantly saying update your WordPress. Always make sure, like, if you're using WordPress, and that's 52% of you out there, always keep it updated, because hackers come along, they get into your content management system, and often using like a JavaScript, they hide links frequently right there on your front page, on your index page, to wherever. And these links are followed by spiders and bots. They are taking reference from your site and you know, using your server, your host, your money, your company, your reputation to promote some of the most god-awful stuff out there on the web. Like, these are the darkest, dirtiest corners of the live web. And this happens to an alarming number of websites. You said, Dave, it's going to affect like 5% of search queries?
Yep. That's a lot of sites. To illustrate an interesting example, we were working with it was a Joomla site. It hadn't been updated. I won't get into why that was, save to say, A, I'm not Joomla, and B, the thing was held together with duct tape, and his developer sort of wasn't keeping it up as he was supposed to. When it got hacked, and it did, and I'll be honest, there's part of me going, okay, good, because this is going to force the hand to get this thing updated finally.
Yeah.
But at any rate, the way they did it was very, very difficult to detect. If your visitor visited the page, you'll love this. If a visitor visited the page, they saw the content as usual. If you looked at Google's cache to see what Google saw on the page, it had actually swapped out all of the content. And injected some links to pharmaceutical sites in the context of a bunch of content about pharmaceuticals. So, sort of hat tip to the hacker. It was actually quite a bright hack.
It's a clever method of getting your links out there, most certainly.
It was, because I've more often seen like a quick hack that just drops some links in the header or footer or something like that, and they're visible, and you just hope the person doesn't see them or notice. But if you want to get your hack onto like a popular site, like onto a real for real site, not just the lowest hanging fruit. The way they did it was fairly, you know, credit where it's due. It was fairly clever. I'm glad we caught it quickly and remedied it, but, or rather talked to
the developer who finally did get everything upgraded.
Now, back in 2013, Google noted hack sites were the second biggest cause of manual penalties, manual actions taken by Google.
Yep.
At that time, they launched a help center for people who have hack sites. It's online, google.com/webmasters/hacked. If you think you're suffering from this, if you think you have been penalized or you know that you've been informed of a manual action, check out google.com/webmasters/hacked, and you might be surprised and terrified by what you find on your own server. Security is folks, you gotta remember, like, it's webmasters were running more than storefronts on the web. This is more than, like, you know, a locked door and an inert building. Think of, like, us as running storefronts on the web that can be filled full of gas. And all it takes is one match and then a whole block is gone. That's the kind of way you got to think about security and your websites. Because as webmasters, we're responsible either to ourselves, but we're also responsible to the greater community or to our clients.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's of great importance. We're kind of like the lawns keepers. I don't even know, palace guard, lawn keeper at the same time, right? Okay, I lost the analogy halfway through, but yeah, it's because I was thinking of Shoshana.
I kind of followed it, though.
Okay, so back to Panda. Google is saying this, and this is coming out of, I guess, back to Panda and PubCon. Google's saying the slow-rolling Panda is really interested in your content. So say you got, like, thin content on a page that really had no real reason for being up, or the content is old, or instead of removing the page, mm-hmm. fix the content. That's Google's advice.
Okay. Not bad advice.
Well, and it's sound too, because those pages, they might have thin content on them. They may be in Google's secondary, you know, in the part of the index that, you know, nobody, the seller of the index that nobody ever sees, but they're still in the index. They're salvageable. And all Google wants is a reason to rank a page, because that gives Google, you know, like, real estate to put ads beside.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want. Okay, moving along.
Well, you know what? Speaking of pandas, about a week ago, it was like literally right after our show, I believe. At least that's when it became sort of published. Penguins. We can talk about penguins. As well, and what I believe is Google, not purposely, but nonetheless, telling us a falsehood. Gary Illis from Google at SMX East last week had noted that the next Penguin update was forthcoming in the, I don't even know what this means, quote unquote, foreseeable future. So who knows what that means, but it's no longer months away. I'm guessing we're actually going to see it next week if I get to put my guess in, because that would put it just under a year. And remember, we all went up in arms over the year thing last time.
Between them, about what we think, right? The search engine optimizers are mad at us. Better get on that penguin.
Oh, no, I think it's more to be a smart aleck. But this time they say, that it is going to be a rollout, like a rolling, constantly updating version of the algorithm. So now let's all remember that they also said this about Panda.
Yeah.
That was like, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, they said that Panda was going to be switching over. They're now saying it about Penguin. If it actually does, I think you and I can agree that'd be an outstanding thing. For webmasters, so that you would know when you were, like, whatever, fixing a spam link issue or whatnot, you would know that, yes, you're not going to have to wait a year or more. That it could actually just recover. I think it would allow them to be a lot more aggressive as well, without fear that, hey, they're going to hurt people now, they, you know, for like a year, right? Like, and they can be much more aggressive with their algorithm, try and hit some areas they haven't, and hey, if it goes wrong, oops, right? And tweak
and pull back quickly from that. So I hope it's going to turn into a rolling algorithm. I really do. Even if it just went to the version of Panda, right, where it's every, you know, much more frequently and you know, especially the one where they're pushing it constantly now or pushing it periodically. If it can even go to that, I'll be happy.
As an SEO, the long march of the penguins has been immensely frustrating.
Yeah.
And it's been really confusing for me, too, because, I mean, Dave, you know how Google works. It's all about link evaluation, the relevant strength of any given link coming into a page weighed against the quality of the content on that page.
Yeah.
So there's a whole big section of how we think about Google and Google's operation that hasn't been operating the way we expect it to for over a year now.
Yeah.
And when you think about link evaluation, it has to be a constant churn. So they are churning something. And that something is Penguin related, but we know that a better, more new and improved and even smarter Penguin is on the long march. It's coming this way. It's just around the corner. Its arrival is imminent. She'll be coming around the mountain when she comes.
Yeah.
Part of being an SEO is doing a lot of predictive analysis, and this is impossible to even factor. You know, what do you think about this? Do you try to suppress giggles when you tell a client that you believe a penguin rollout is imminent?
Yeah, I do. And you know what? I always put the like, and here's what they've said, and you know. So here's our best guess, but they're wrong as often as they're right. Probably more often, actually, at least in what they're telling us and in their timelines.
Now, I don't know about you, but I consider myself a student of absurdity. Mm-hmm. And I love Google for this because it actually makes my client meetings a lot more fun because I get to explain, you know, Google's hesitancy to actually commit to something because, well, again, it feels like Google broke itself about a year ago and they're trying to patch it together. Ever since?
Yep. Yeah,
that's exactly. Speaking of... Sorry, Dave?
That's exactly right.
Speaking of Google kind of sort of breaking itself, we're going to have to touch on Google Plus in a few moments because just after this happens, this always happens on a Friday after we've done our show. Something really funny will happen tomorrow after we've done our show and we won't be able to talk about it until it's like so old it's almost dead. At SMX last Friday, but after we got off the air, Gary Ellis, one of our newfound friends at Google, suggested that authorship may not be dead after all. Now, we're going to have to leave you hanging on that because we got to take a commercial break, but I do want to come back and just talk about like the ups and downs of tools in the Google Plus ecosystem. But before we do that, we got to take a break here on Webcology. It's the 8th of October, 2015. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, and you're listening to Webcology on Webmaster Radio. Back after these messages.
Sit tight and don't move. Webcology. We'll be back after this short break.
Finding links to improve your rankings in the search engines is time-consuming and frustrating for many of us. The Hoth is the go-to company to help lighten your link-building load. Their white-label SEO was made specifically for agencies, in-house SEOs, and affiliates. The Hoth also offers high-quality custom local citation building to improve search rankings in Google's maps and localized results, providing fulfillment for some of the largest SEO companies in the world. The Hoth offers link and citation building services you can trust. Get $20 in link building or citation building credits free by going to thehoth.com/radio. thehoth.com/radio.
Looking for a white label SEO and social platform for your clients? Think
eBrands.
Free and unlimited SEO audit reports.
eBrands.
Premium Facebook apps and welcome page creators.
eBrands.
Twitter management app, analytics, and mobile site generators.
eBrands.
Let eBrands manage your search and social media campaigns and give you and your clients access to their white label dashboard, which have great reports that will wow your clients and deliver great ROI and results. Try eBrands for 30 days. Go to eBrandsWithAZ.com or call 1-866-625-5717. That's eBrands with a Z for
eBrands.
Introducing Rumble, the smart mobile management system, the first end-to-end mobile platform where you can make real-time app modifications from a point-and-click dashboard. Want to change the design of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Want to change the ad map of your app? Point click and it's live in real time. Want to change the content mix of your app? Point click and it's live in real time. Power your mobile business with Rumble. Are you ready to rumble? Visit www.rumble.me.
Commercials off. Now back to Webcology, only on webmasterradio.fm.
Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Web Culture on WebmasterRadio.fm. It's October the 8th, 2015. And hey Dave, I just want to do this one really quickly. Remember a couple of weeks ago, Mark Zuckerberg suggested that Facebook was going to come out with a dislike button?
Yes.
They didn't. They chose not to. Instead, what they're doing is they're coming out with a ratings scale from like to love to ha-ha, to yay, to wow, to sad, to angry. They're coming out with emojis so that people can rate how this piece, this post, this Facebook thingamabobber made them feel. It's kind of, I think that's kind of interesting. It's a lot stronger than a like or dislike button when you think about it, and makes me think even more that user reaction is going to play a huge part in whatever Facebook rolls out as its algo, you know, next iteration.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. It kind of makes me... I have to wonder, and I just think it's going to be a disaster in this context. We all know, like most Facebook, a lot of Facebook, most, I think it's most, is on mobile. So I have to wonder how that's all going to play out on a mobile experience. We can all, you know, you can easily integrate that into desktop, but how do you integrate that properly into mobile without taking up more of my screen? I assume it'll be like another pop-up, but to me it's, now there's one extra step my big fat thumbs have to do on my mobile device, but we'll see. Hopefully I'm wrong.
Well, you know what? You may well be right. In a mobile environment, that may be almost impossible to use properly. But that they're doing it makes me think that they're going to go even – look even stronger at – more strongly at user reaction.
Well, and powerful. Like, think about the advertising targeting. Now,
yeah.
You now know how I feel at a specific moment in time.
And it's not just an A-B. We have a whole range. So it's much easier to slot people into, you know, various areas, various types of... It's easier to profile people when you got more data on how they actually feel about something.
Yeah.
So there you go, friends. You will soon be seeing a series of emojis in Facebook, probably right beside or underneath the like button, so you can rate exactly how much you like or dislike this piece of information you're paying attention to. Whatever happened to Grumpy Cat? What would Grumpy Cat think about this?
Maybe that'll be one of the emojis.
Perhaps. Okay, dislike. Well, I don't dislike. Actually, I like this, but I... it's just like how it makes my head feel. Last week, after we got off the air, came out on Friday the 2nd, on Thursday at Ask the Search Engine session at SMX East, again, last week in New York, Gary Ellis was reacting to a comment regarding authorship, something a lot of us stopped messing with after Google sort of, you know, killed Google Plus. They killed authorship, then they killed Google Plus itself, but they didn't kill Google Plus itself, and apparently they didn't kill authorship either. But they're not using it, but they still recommend we include it because they might use it again in the future. So you put all of that together, and if your head hasn't popped by now, and trying to figure out exactly what I mean by it, what I think I mean is Google authorship isn't appearing in search results anymore, and it doesn't seem to be really influencing search results anymore, but Google is still gathering data around it, and it might use it later in the future. What do you reckon?
You know what? It's funny. I'd left it, like, on ours, because I knew it wasn't going to hurt.
Yeah.
And so it is interesting. To me, what it comes down to is the more information that I can pass to Google, like, assuming that I'm above board in what I'm doing, the more information I can pass to Google about my site and its authors, the better off I am. So this is a case where, yeah, to me, I knew it wasn't going to hurt. I knew that I was giving Google a bit more info. Comes out that they're collecting it, and that they might use it again. That's a big might. I don't know that they'll pull it back again, but I do know that passing them information about who's doing what, provided you're above board. So not for everybody necessarily in the listening audience, but provided that you're above board, passing information is really never gonna come back and kick in the butt. At worst, it'll be inert, and this proves to be one of those cases where I knew it'd be inert, so we left it. And turns out it might be helpful, and it turns out that they have been collecting data from it.
Well, I'm in kind of a neat position on this one with my practice. About 2 weeks ago, we picked up a new client that, you know, our strategy is entirely a publishing play. Their SEO is already tight.
Like, okay. It's tight.
They got a great that. Website. But they're lacking in really strong content. So, you know, we do that. Absolutely. And I made the recommendation to them to, you know, institute authorship. And I wrote this whole bunch of, I love being neurotic SEO, because you get to write these, like, amazing detailed, like, well, Google says this, but they might really mean this, and I don't know what they really mean, but I'm trying to explain what I think they really mean, and they probably, anybody who says they know is lying. Even those who really do know. Because they tend to be lying too. And you get to write these, like, great elaborate explanations that really says, just rel equals author. Can't hurt. But no, I do believe that they are gathering data. And the earlier you start, algorithmic results tend to favor those entities that have the most data to, you know, calculate the result.
Mm-hmm.
So you want strong placements. Give them, like you said, Dave, give them more to think about.
Right.
And authorship is one of those things. Now, it mightn't directly affect you today, but if they ever do turn it back on again, those who've established those profiles and have, you know, big, thick, juicy profiles are likely to benefit fastest. That's my thinking.
Right, because we've already got the data. They're not building from scratch.
Yeah, and it is so much easier to put it bluntly, it's much easier to kick people off the mountain than it is to climb the mountain yourself.
Right.
So you want to be at the top so that you can resist the others who are coming to try to take your place. The difference between top 10 and sub 10 is everything.
Yeah.
So authorship is still in play, even though it's not really still in play. There you go.
So we got about something we have minutes. To cover. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
We got about 4 minutes. I like the artificial intelligence one that you posted.
All right, let's do it.
What's this all about? Google is investing in Google's investing in German artificial intelligence. So you know it's solid state.
Yeah, I found it really interesting because I'd read two interesting stories on artificial intelligence in a 24-hour period, and I thought, okay, I mean, we know that that's what science is striving for right now, at least computer science. Google is investing in a DFKI, which is German, and I don't have the translation, but the German
Research Center for Artificial Intelligence. Right. That's the loose translation.
That's what it turns into. A nonprofit institute with 450 scientists, academic and others, a budget of about $46 million. So quite a good budget. Google's in there. They're building robots and working on AI, apparently doing quite well with that. What I found interesting is that ties to another story from yesterday
where AI tests, basically the AI was written up and developed by folks at MIT. Here's what I loved is it wasn't tested by the folks at MIT. It was tested by some folks at the University, I believe it was of Indiana. Oh, Illinois, sorry, at the University. So love when they move it to somebody else for testing, obviously. Mm-hmm. And they've now developed AI that's performing at a four-year-old level. That's a big leap forward, like a big leap forward in AI. It didn't do well in word reasoning, or comprehension rather, but it did well in reasoning, vocabulary, and information collection. Not surprisingly that its problem is in understanding some of the more complex things that the human brain can. But at any rate, it's working at a four-year-old level at this point. Now we've got Google over on the other hand, and we've got to remember that just a few years ago, we weren't even close to four-year-old. Like they couldn't even perform on proper IQ tests. So now we've got Google investing here on German AI plants, going to be able to work on the research being done from MIT and around the world. We're close, is what I'm saying. And how Google is going to use this in there. Let's also remember that they've been buying up, just going back a couple of years, they were buying up robotics companies like it was going out of style. They bought like seven in a year.
Okay, we got a minute left, so I just want to get this in here really quickly. Interesting thing I see about this story in Google and AI. Like, as you said, the artificial intelligence can understand the words, and they can understand how the words apply. They understand synonyms, all this, so they never get the context. German and English are very different ways. Languages are very different ways of phrasing things. I see this as incredibly interesting because, you know, it's all in the construction of the phrasing for artificial intelligence. Now Google's looking at it in like two remarkably different languages.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Cool. It's going to be great.
I wish I could expand on that, but we're about to get the hook music any second now. About a minute ago, I got the note that said 1 minute to hook. So I know it's coming. He's not going to sneak up on us this time. Clever Brasco. So yeah, that's kind of neat. It'll be cool to see where that goes in the future, and we'll have to talk about that in the future because the hook is coming. So I'm gonna preempt it. On behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. This is the most articulate I've ever done this closing. You've been listening to Webcology on webmasterradio.fm on the 8th of October 2015. Stick around, friends. There's amazing stuff coming up on the network after this hook music.
This has been a presentation of WebmasterRadio.fm, the world's largest business-to-business radio and podcast network. We welcome you to sample past episodes of this program, as well as our complete library of programs, on demand or on the air via our 24/7 live audio stream at www.webmasterradio.fm. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors.